Hey, filmmakers, Shane Hurlbut here, ASC cinematographer and co-founder of Filmmakers Academy. You know, when I started out, I had to learn it all the hard way. There was no roadmap, no mentor, just a trial by fire. And that's why I built Filmmakers Academy, to give you the tools I wish I had coming up. We're talking about a shortcut here. We drop new content multiple times a month, connect filmmakers around the world, and coach you through every step of your journey. And hey, right now you can get $50 off your first year of annual membership with code FAPOD50. So come join us. Let's build your career together.
All right, welcome to Finding the Frame. Today we are joined by two-time Academy Award nominee and longtime collaborator of Guillermo del Toro, a DP whose bold, expressive cinematography has shaped some of the modern cinema's most striking fantasies, such as The Shape of Water, Crimson Peak, Nightmare Alley. He's worked on John Wick, and most recently, Frankenstein. His work is celebrated for its painterly use of light, shadow and colour in service of deeply emotional storytelling. And it is my honour and pleasure to welcome Dan Lauston, ASC, to the pod. Dan, welcome to Finding the Frame. So Dan, first of all, what I want to do is give a little baseline, you know, so before we dig into Frankenstein itself, which is a fantastic achievement, what I want to do is talk about the journey that got you there. So let's talk about how you started out. I believe it was as a stills photographer, is that correct?
That's 100% correct. I'm educated, I'm coming from a normal, socially normal family at 40 k's out of Copenhagen. My daddy was working in a shipyard, my mom was a school teacher, and we didn't have a piano back home. So I'm coming from a straight, normal family. And nobody was like artists or into the film business or anything. So one day I went to school, you know, and I have a good friend in the school. And we start, why are we not starting to take pictures? And, you know, this is before, some years ago. So there was no YouTube, there was no nothing. So, you know, you went to the library and looked at a book and how do you take pictures? So we did that. And we were starting from scratch. We made all the mistakes in the world. And I think that's very important to do as artists. You know, you have to not be afraid of your mistakes because that you learn something of that. So I did that. And I went, I was educating in still photography, a fashion photography, when I was 18, I think. And I was really bored of that. And I didn't know what to do. And like, because I was very much into documentary photographers. But there was like, I want to be a National Geographic photographer, but it's pretty difficult to do that when you're coming from a small town in Denmark. And then my sister have seen, my big sister Annette, she have seen advertising in the Danish newspaper about if you want to go to the Danish film school, it's now they have examinations. And she asked me, why are you not doing that? And I said, sorry, I'm not into film. I don't know anything about film. I don't care. It's not my call. And, you know, big sisters are big sisters that said, oh, don't be like that. Give it a try. So I took sent some of my pictures in, and I was making, applications to get in. And I was sure I never heard anything about that. So a month later or something, I got a letter from the Danish film school that wanted me to come to an interview. And, of course, I was totally in panic because I really didn't know anything about movie making. And I came into the film school, and, of course, I don't know what's happening. They like what I have done, my pictures. So a month later, again, I got a letter. Welcome to the Danish Film School. You don't have to go to insist. We just like you to start. And of course, I was in shock of panic because I didn't know anything. You know, I really didn't know anything about movie making. And the other students was much older than me. And those guys have been dreaming of being cinematographers since they were small. So the first half year or something, I couldn't do anything, you know. I've never seen a film camera. I've never heard, you know, I didn't know anything. But I said before, you know, you have to fight for what you like. And what I really like about school is, you know, you're coming in, you're there together with a lot of students and you're making a lot of mistakes. And again, don't be afraid of your mistakes because you learn of that. And that's amazing in schools, I think, because you can just do that. You can make mistakes all the time. But and we did that, of course, and especially I did it because I have no clue and what I did. So I did the film school for 3 and a half years, 4 years, 3 years. And when I was 25, I came out and I shot my first feature film when I was 25. And I've done that since. So that is a short story of my background.
So it's just been this constant, you know, doing things that you don't necessarily know. You're just grasping it with both hands and going for it, really.
Exactly. And, you know, when I came into the school, it didn't take me many minutes to figure out this was fantastic because movie making is amazing. And I loved it, of course, right away, but I couldn't do it. And I think it's important to be a fighter, and I really fight for what I like. So I've done that. I do that still every day. I think that's a good way to do it.
Is that something that you've carried on doing right now up until, you know, working with Guillermo del Toro and even on Frankenstein itself, you're embracing things that you haven't necessarily done before, but you're just sort of seeing where it goes and hoping for the best?
No, right now it's not hoping for the best anymore because now we know I've done this for so many years. So again, I know where we want to go and I know how we want to do it. But a lot of times, you know, we want to break our own rules. We want to break our own ice. We want to go out where we cannot, where the water is too deep. And we don't like to go into like, oh, we do that. We did that last time. Let's do it again. We want to break our own rules. We try to open our windows all the time. And I try to go into all movies and all directors with open mind. And just, this is the directors' ideas. And I don't like to support them as good as I can, but I don't like to go this, oh, we did that last time, so let's do it again. I really try to do something new, and we did that the same in Frankenstein.
Yeah. Is it just going back to the National Film School and everything like that? So obviously you're going into that and you're saying that you didn't really necessarily have a huge passion to go into film or anything like that. Was there any sort of filmmakers that you were watching at that time that you sort of said, oh, I like their work or I like what they were doing or anything like that? I've read somewhere that you like Barry Lyndon and a little bit of that kind of John Alcott kind of stuff. But was there anybody, Danish filmmakers or filmmakers worldwide, that you were looking at and saying, I really like what they're doing as filmmakers?
No, not before I went into the film school, but when I went into the film school, you know, of course you start to see all the classic movies, you know, all the black and white. And I was a big fan of black and white movies when I went to film school. And, you know, we have Ingmar Bergman's first cinematographer, Gunnar Fischer. He was the teacher for us for a while. And I think he was, unfortunately, he's dead now, but he was a master of the masters. So he was learning us a lot about like lighting and how to tell stories with light and shadows and moving the cameras. But of course, all the big cinematographers, you know, I've been inspiration of them, you know, Lawrence of Arabia, Apocalypse Now, I'm Cuba, all these classic, beautiful movies, and I really like them. And when we start to talk about Frankenstein, Guillermo and me was looking a lot into Barry Lyndon, just like, because that's a classic movie and it looks amazing, and there was the same period, but we want to go on our color palette, but we just look into Barry Lyndon because there's a lot of candles and it looks fantastic, but we just want to go another way. And I don't think there was inspiration, but it was just fantastic to look at it. And everybody has seen Barry Lyndon a lot of times and it's a masterpiece.
Absolutely. And I'd say as well, in terms of artistry and things like that, you know, you can pick out certain frames from Barry Lyndon and hang them on your wall, I suppose, in that respect. They're absolutely beautiful. Was that something that captured your eye early on? Were you looking at sort of artists? Like, I don't know, I'm trying to think Danish artists. Wilhelm Hammershøi is probably the only one that stands out to me. Was there any of those kind of Danish artists that you were looking at as painters? Because as I said, it's kind of looking at what you've become as a cinematographer, you know, you're capturing these frames, and Frankenstein is filled with these beautiful wides and these, as I said, I'd quite happily have one above Jaws there, I think, you know what I mean, or anything like that. Were you inspired by painters of the time?
And we looked, you know, I think painters is amazing to look at. And, you know, we were looking into Hammershøi, the Danish painter, and we were looking in Caravaggio, Rembrandt, these classic, beautiful movies. And Caravaggio was like, I think the way he's painting with lights, and he was like always have a very dark background, you know, single source lighting, and that's something Guillermo and me is very, very keen to do all the time. And we talked about that a lot when we did Frankenstein. Like, we want to have this single source lighting, not be afraid of the darkness, and have it like a very moving camera, but a very contrasting. We tried to do the movie, a classic movie, but shot very modern. That was our idea in the beginning.
So tell me then, walk me through then, you know, this relationship between you and Guillermo. How did it begin? How do you come together? How do you discover each other? And when was it that you found that what was it about his sensibility that resonated with you as a cinematographer? You wanted to work with him as a director.
You know, it's always normally like the director look for the cinematographer. He's not going the other same way, because the director's like, you want to make me help to do your movie. So I was doing a movie for the Weinstein Brothers in 1998, I think, maybe 7 or something. And those guys liked my dailies, and they know Guillermo should do his first American movie and my second American movie. So he asked Guillermo, the producer said, look at this Danish DP. And Guillermo watched some dailies and he likes them. Because I think I've been my style all the time, you know, like single source lighting, don't be afraid of the shadow side. So we met Guillermo, and and he asked me to do Mimic. And that was his first American movie. And we shot on film, because it's many years ago. And there was the same color palette, like very warm amber lights and steel blue. And that was we fall in love with that, both of us. And, you know, we have the same feeling about light. We have the same feeling about storytelling. And of course, we liked each other as persons as well. We shot Mimic because Mimic was a very difficult movie to shoot. There was a lot of troubles, and there was like a very dark movie. So I was sure I was getting fired every second day, because it was, but I survived. And of course, you know, we was pretty young those days, and we have a really good chemistry between us, you know, because we liked the movie making we did together. And then he asked me to do, like 15 years later, he asked me to do Crimson Peak. And that was the first time we met after, I think, 15 years, because my schedule was something and his schedule, we never meet each other for these 15 years. So he asked me to come back to Toronto to have some meetings. And it was like coming back to your brother. It was fantastic, because we really haven't seen each other for many, many years. And we just came in. We was actually going on a location scout right away. I came from the airport, go to the location scout. And I was like, oh. And that was so fantastic, because sometimes, you know, you just have to feel each other a little bit again. But we didn't have that issue. You know, it was just, hey, this is fantastic. So we shot that. And that was a beautiful, beautiful movie, I think, a fantastic story. But it's one of those movies that didn't live for long. It was a really shame. And then we did that. He started to talk about Frankenstein. He said, oh, Frankenstein could be a cool movie. I really like to do that. That was the first time I heard about it. Maybe he talked a little bit on Mimic, but I don't remember that clearly. I think he talked about that was his dream project, but, you know, it was so far away. So,
but really,
on Crimson Peak, he was a little, this could be, because Crimson Peak and Frankenstein is the same period.
Yeah, one's a gothic fantasy, the other one's more gothic romance, I suppose we're talking. So yeah, it's about a similar kind of style, I suppose, as well, right?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. So what, he was talking about it way back then, so you could tell that this was something he was ruminating on.
I didn't thought so much about it. I'm just remembering, you know, he said, this is my dream project, if that's coming true one day. And I didn't knew too much about Frankenstein. Of course, I've seen some of the older Frankenstein movies, but it was not something I said, oh, Frankenstein could be fantastic. I learned that later on, because I know him better and better and know his world about Frankenstein, his how he likes to do it. And then we did the Shape of Water, and then he told even more about it. And then Nightmare Alley, and said, I'm sure our next movie is going to be Frankenstein. And then I read the book. First time, and of course the book is amazing. And then I got the screenplay. I was surprised about how much he changed it, and I should not be surprised about that, because Guillermo's world is like changing stuff. So the screenplay is amazing, and then we made a fantastic movie.
Tell me how that works then. So when he comes to you with his script, like you just talked about that there, and I've seen, I know that just before then you were talking about location scouting and going off in Toronto and location scouting within there. And one of the things I've been fortunate, I follow Guillermo on his socials and he always puts up these pictures when he's location scouting. So you're literally watching from the genesis of the movie right through, you know, like when he's there. And many of those pictures are pictures you took when he's on location scouting things. So that's always a really nice resource for me. But talk to me about how you approach prep. So when Guillermo comes to you, is it the script first of all, or is he asking you to look for certain locations before you've even read anything? What's your approach?
Normally, when he was location scouting, I was shooting another movie. So I was, at the beginning, I was not. In the first scout, Tamara, the production designer, and Guillermo and producers were scouting. But Guillermo has this very specific way. You know, when he's starting doing a project, he's so into it very, very, very early. And what he does, he have a very specific ideas about how everything should look. And that's amazing as for a cinematographer to work together with a director that's so specific. So we do these sketches, moon color boards for different scenes. So everybody in the movie is starting on the same, you know, from the same level. It's not like, and he's so inspirational about that. It's like, and then you have some rough storyboards, you know, this is the basics of the movie. And then everybody's starting out for that. So that is a really, really good ground for everybody. It's not like this is the way he thinks it should be. And of course, he can change. But it's just, he has this very specific, this scene should look a little bit like that. This scene should look a little bit like that. Then Tamara is designing the sets together with him. And I'm coming in and we talk about colors. And it's the same with Kate and the costumes, you know. The whole ideas about color is so specific from Guillermo and, of course, from everybody else, the head of departments. We are just coming with ideas and the feeling the gaps in. And it's like a small family that we are talking about. It's not like costume designers is only talking about costumes. You know, everybody's talking about a little bit of it, about everything. And I'm talking about not only about light and camera angles, we're talking about the color palettes, you know, how should we do that? What color should that scene be? And how dark should the walls be in the sets? And we're talking, it's like, it's a very good cooperation about people that are working close together. Of course, Guillermo has these strong ideas about how he wants to do it, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, he talked. I was fortunate to see him do a Q&A at the Academy a month and a half ago now, literally when it was coming out. And he talked about this. He talked about how he wanted to get everybody on the same page and he liked everybody to have an input. And one of the things that he said that I wonder if you could sort of speak to it and take me through. He said, for me, he said, costume design is cinematography. Production design is, so everything is, you know, part of the lighting of the scene, I suppose. It's how the light goes through Mia Goth's dress and things like that. And yeah, talk me through that. So when he says costume design is cinematography, what do you think, what is it that Guillermo's trying to say there? Not that he's decrying you as a cinematographer, by the way.
No. I think what he's trying to say, you know, costumes is one thing when you're making the costumes, but the costumes is changing so much when you light it and when it's coming into the set. You know, everything is blending together. If, let's say they're designing a green dress as we did, but if you're lighting with very blue light, it's going to change the color. If you're lighting that with very warm color, it's going to change the color as well. So, you know, everything is like, that's so important to talk about what color is this scene, you know, and that's the same with the production design. And that is so important. Everybody's talking together, because if you just talk about the costumes or the sets and you don't talk about how are we going to light it? Light is so powerful because, you know, how dark is that scene going? If you have a brown jacket on and the night shoot is going to be very dark, then it's going to be black. You know, the whole color palette about, and the mood in the movie is so important for the costumes and for the sets as well. And you know, if Tamara is designing a set that's very orange and Kate is coming in with a dress that's very blue, maybe that's going to be too much for the contrast, and I'm lighting with a blue light, it's just going to be a mess. But that's the reason you're talking so specific about what color is a dress, what color is the set, and how are we going to let it? And is it going to be a dark scene? Is it going to be a bright scene? And I think that is what he means about, you know, everything is blending together. You cannot take one thing out and say, this is production design or this is cinematography, because everything is blended together like a big story.
Yeah. I think what you, since you've talked about it, it would be interesting to go into it, because the color palette, something that Guillermo was talking about, how we start off with this like red, black and white when it's innocent very early on, and then how that blooms and everything like that. So is what were you trying to do with the color palette, like in terms of, you know, saturating everything when the creature comes to life and everything like that? What was your process?
No, we talked a lot about, you know, the lights should come into the dark rooms. You know, we are shooting a lot of into the light, into the sunshine. We do that a lot all the way through the movie. First time we see the lab before the change, that, you know, it's a pretty dark room, but a very long, very strong sunshine coming in. So we just have this feeling about every time he's doing something with the creature in the beginning, the light is coming through the windows, very, very strong lights. And the first time we see the creature and he opens the blinders, and there's this father and son scene where they're looking out to the sunshine. There's like warm, warm light coming through the windows. And it's a little bit of very warm and loveful scene together with father and son. And that's the same first time in the lab where he's trying to shave him. That's a very warm scene, very, very warm sunset. And then when everything starts to fall apart, when he's coming down to the holding cell where he's keeping him tied up, the light is changing. It's getting much more soft, but still very contrasty, and much more to the blue side. It's getting very cold scenes, but it's not like it's getting blue, blue, blue. We just take the warmth away, and we are not getting anything warm down to that holding cell. It's before Mira is coming down with the candles. So we try to do every time we're together with the creature in the beginning, when the creature is happy, we just have this warm light coming through the windows or coming from candles. And that is what we try. And then if everything is falling apart, it's just going to be very, very much more to the cold side, until he's coming back to the farmhouse where he's together with the old man, where we have this very, very warm light coming through the windows again. So we try to tell that story a little bit with the color of the light.
Yeah. And one of the things that Guillermo said in his thing was, he was talking about, and I was flabbergasted, he was talking about how all of the lighting is offset. It's outside the sets, right? So it's all shooting through windows and everything like that. There's nothing on. Did that provide you difficulties, or was that something that you were quite happy to?
No, that's it. It's Guillermo and me talking about how we want to shoot the scenes. We want to shoot them. Our idea was, we want to shoot Lars format. We want to shoot Alexa 65. And we shot a little bit on Nightmare Alley, but we never shot it with a full sensor. So this time we want to go Lars format, and we want to go wide, very wide angles. So we shot everything. I think we shot 90% of the movie on a 24mm. And the way we shot, you know, we're coming into a set where we see the full set, and then we're tracking behind one of the actors with a techno crane or with a Steadicam, and we are coming into a big close-up in the end. So, you know, I have to be lit for a wide shot and a tight shot at the same time. And because we are using a fair amount of smoke, so you have to have all the lights outside of the windows on the sets, as on the location, to keep the consistency in the light and in the smoke. As soon as you're putting any lights inside, it's just breaking up the whole feeling of lights. And that's when we're talking about the designing of the sets with Chimera. We talked a lot about where should the windows be? Where do we want to have the key light coming in? How do we think the blocking should be in the scenes? And that's, of course, Guillermo is a huge part of that, because he knows what he wants to do. So the design of the sets there is, of course, discussion with Guillermo, Chimera and myself about putting windows in, or what are we going to do? How dark should the walls be? But the reason we want to have all the lights outside is it's giving a lot of freedom for the camera, and is the way the light is traveling is much, much nicer.
Let me ask this question first before I go into that, because I was going to ask something completely different. But let me ask this one first. Those windows felt very Fellini-like. They were huge, and it felt very like these sets were huge, like operatic sort of sets. Would that be a fair assessment?
I'd wager. Sure.
Yeah. So when you're shooting those, and you're shooting them with a, what, a 24mm lens, did that provide you with difficulties when you were trying to go into sort of close-up or emotional sort of face moments? Was there anything, you know, were you trying to pick those out, or was that fairly easy?
I will not say it was easy, but it was not super complicated. But again, when you're coming in, when you, because we have this single source lighting, when we're lighting, we're more or less always lighting from the shadow side. We like to have the shadow sides to the cameras. You know, that's just the thing we like. So we know how the blocking is going to end. And so we said, let's move them 3 feet forward, because then it's going to be nicer with this close-up in the end. So we're thinking about that a lot, you know. And Guillermo's not making a lot of close-ups, you know. He's doing a big master, and then he's turning around to do another big master. The camera's dancing a lot around with him. So I just try to put the actors, we try to put the actors together where it's best for the light, because we know where they're going to end in the scene. And I'm not... When we're doing the close-ups, we're not taking a lot of flies into the set, because, again, that's going to be so sensitive for the smoke. So we, again, it's more negative feeling coming in with a big floppy flag or something like... The key light is always coming from outside.
Were you using any diffusion on the lens to help, you know, sort of pull those blacks out?
Yeah, you know, we, because of the combination about Alexa 65 and Leica clear lenses, it's very sharp. It's really beautiful, but it's very sharp. It's not good for the skin tones, I think. So we're shooting with a black ProMish, but we shoot that with the inside the camera. You know, it's behind the lens. We have a click-on magnetic filter we're putting on the lens. And the beauty of that is it's burning out the highlights, but it keeps the black. If you see the move, the richness in the black is very subtle. And that is because the diffusion filter is behind the lens. So if we get a flare, we get a lens flare, we don't get a filter flare. And I think it's a lot of the richness of that is like because of the diffusion inside. And the diffusion helps a lot for the skin tones. So we did that all the time.
That makes total sense. What you mentioned it before, and I said I'd come back to it, and it was a thing I desperately wanted to jump into, but... Camera movement wise, then you were just saying about how you were dancing around the room with him, and it really did feel that way when he was in the act of creation, is the best way I can probably describe it. The camera is almost a character in itself, waltzing around the room with him. Is that on a steady cam? Or are you on a crane?
That's a split between. We never shot one single shot where the operator was looking into the eyepiece. We always shot on a crane or steady cam or a mini jeep with a hot head on. But the way Guillermo is blocking the scene is like he have an intercom with the operator and the dolly grips, so he knows exactly how to block the scene with a camera, because for him the blocking and the next cut is so important. So you know he's the only one that can do that, because you know exactly where he's going to cut. So that's like a dance between operator, dolly grip or crane operator, and it works extremely well.
Yeah. Well, those that's good. Sorry, one, Dan, forgive me.
Oh, and of course, you need the best focus puller in the world. We have that Doug Lavender, because everything is moving around a little bit, and last format focus pulling is really, really good. But it works really well. But that's like a really ballet with a big crane, and it's fantastic.
It was definitely part of the storytelling. Was this a discussion that you had with Guillermo, you know, in prep? You were talking about how the camera was going to move and when it was going to be static and when it was, you know, how it was going to help convey the story in that respect?
No, we just talked about how we want to do it, but what was the storytelling? But, you know, we knew from the beginning, because he did the same of Shape of Water and Nightmare Alley. He likes to talk to the operators and the grips about where the crane or where the camera should be. So he has done that for a couple of movies. And he didn't do that so much on Mimic, because I was DPing operating Mimic. And, you know, that was a much smaller movie and we didn't use so much. There was much more dollies and tracks and stuff like that. But after that, especially after Crimson Peak, we started to move the camera a lot with And he talks to the operators all the time and the dollar grips. And it's a really, really good way to do it because he knows exactly where the cut is. And it's there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, Shape of Water, it felt like that kind of movement. Again, it was that kind of, you know, when they were dancing, when they're in the lab scene, I suppose, those kind of moments. Yeah.
But Shape of Water, that was like the first movie we really did it. But and it works extremely well. But I think on Frankenstein was shot longer takes. And sometimes we did, you know, one scene was one take. But there was no rule about that. It was just like, he feels like this is, I got it and this master. And of course, that's wow. Do you know, you don't want to do any covers? No, I think I got it. That is, he got it because we're never doing peacocks. We're not doing anything. So we're shooting what we need today. And he's so specific about it. He's editing. And because what he's doing, he's editing every evening and every morning. So first time I see example, that's like a rough cut the next day. And it works extremely well.
He talked about this in his thing. He said about how everybody is allowed to come and see the cut when he's done one the night before or the next morning. Everybody, even PAs, are invited in to come and watch and stuff like that and give opinions, which...
And that is amazing because he knows movie making is a group of people. It's a corporation. You know, we do this together. Of course, he's a director and he knows exactly where he wants to go and what to do, but he is... the director, and he just taking everybody into the process, and it's a fantastic way to do it.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, like, obviously we've heard him a lot. He's been on a lot of different shows or different things saying, you know, fuck AI, I suppose. But I think that watching him talk about the process of making a movie and when he talks about the camera dancing and those kind of elements like that, and like you've just said there, it feels like this is a love letter to making film itself as much as it is to, yeah, carry on.
No, but it is that, you know, he really is, again, he's a director and he knows exactly where he wants to go, but he's just dragging everybody in. So let's do this together. It's not like everybody have an opinion about it. It's just like, if you want to go into the editing room and see what we have done, you're more than welcome. It's not like he wants to have everybody's opinion, but he's very open about this is a movie we're doing together, but of course I'm a director. And of course, him and me is talking a lot about how to do everything because we have done 5 movies together and we are talking the same language. And at in that point where we are right now, it's fantastic.
Yeah. One thing, I mean, this is going way off thing, so I'll come back to what I'm talking about because I want to get into practical effects and things like that and visual designs and stuff. But one of the things that I really wanted to ask you about was... when I knew you were coming on the pod, was about Nightmare Alley and whose decision it was to do the noir version. Because when I saw the black and white version of Nightmare Alley, I thought it was just a better film. You know, I loved the film itself when I first saw it, but once I saw it in black and white, it just seemed to stand out so much more. It was an amazing film. I kind of wish that was what the original was like, you know?
Yeah, I like the color version. You know, I have to say that I really liked it because I just think the color palette on that movie was amazing as well. But then, We talked about when we shot the movie, we talked about we should maybe do a black and white version. So the lighting is very much black and white, you know, it's very noir lighting, the very Hollywood one case straight over the camera. It's a very classic film lighting. And see the black and white version works perfect because it's shot very, very noir. But I like the version as well. The black and white movie is fantastic, but we talked a lot about that a lot when we shot Nightmare Alley. You know, you can just take a color away from the monitors. So we talked a lot about, but I would love to make a black and white movie, but do it for real, like shooting it monochromatic, no way back. But it seems to be very, very complicated to find the money for that.
Going back to those old Ingmar Bergman versions, huh?
Exactly. Going to Nyquist. And with Nightmare Alley, we talked a lot. This should be a black and white. So how can we make so the color version is very beautiful and the black and white version works as well? And I think that works pretty well because I like the opera.
It does. I love the movie. I thought it was underappreciated when it came out because I think it was 2019 that came out. It didn't really get as much hype as what it should have done because I really enjoyed it.
No, brilliant. But that was like around COVID, wasn't it, where everything was a problem?
Correct.
And because I remember we shot it under COVID and we get shut down for half a year. And everybody was thought, no, COVID is over in 2 weeks from now. But then we was away from 6 months.
Going back to Frankenstein then, and we're talking about practical effects and things like that. So the film used practical effects extensively. You've got fire in there, there's steam going on, there's the rain at points, there's miniatures that, you know, Guillermo is obviously famed for his miniatures and things like this, but there's some phenomenal looking miniatures in that. So you actively avoided using blue screen and things like that. So when you're shooting those, are you having to adapt? You're obviously shooting those with this 24 millimeter lens. Are you having to adapt to those practical effects that might, you know, behave unpredictably, the fire and things like that? How are you shooting that?
We have big discussions when we have to do all the fires, you know, around the boat. The boat is a big, you know, Tamara designed this huge boat, you know, like 300 feet or whatever, like huge boat that we built on the back lot and outside of the studio. And the key lights from the whole boat sequences in the nighttime is like flaming torches. We have a lot of discussion about that because I really like that. I like flaming torches because it's so organic and it's so dynamic as well and dramatic. But there was a big discussion about, is that too dangerous? Because, you know, actors have to hold a torch in the hand and could be catch fire and stuff like that. So we did a couple of tests with that. And of course, those torches in the movie was real torches because you... And that was like the actors were making their own key light for them. There was their own gaffers. And the beauty of that is when the wind is changing, the light is changing as well. And it's just getting so organic. And I love that. That's the same with rain. The rain is just the third element for a lot of dramatic scenes when they're on the rooftop and the lighting is starting and lighting strikes in the rain. It's just getting so dramatic and organic with this rain everywhere. And, you know, we love rain. You know, we have done rain in all the movies we have done. And I cannot get enough rain. It's so fantastic. So we like to do as much practical as we can do. We like to have fireplaces where we can have fireplaces. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, you have to make, and that's the same in candles, sometimes you have to make artificial fireplaces because you're coming to an old castle and the fireplace is not working, so you have to put a light in there and then the visual effects are going to paint it out. That is just the nature of this kind of movie making. And of course, Dennis, the visual effects supervisor, did an amazing job there. But he, you know, nowadays you put a light in the shot to get the right atmosphere and you just paint it out. And of course, you cannot do it, you couldn't do that when they did a couple of weeks now or whatever, you know, it's getting easier now because you can just put stuff in and you paint it out. But we try to do as much as we can practical. That's the same when we did the miniature shoot in UK. We have a fantastic miniature shoot crew here in England. So Guillermo and me flew over to light the scenes together with Dennis. So we did everything at 1:20 miniature at the lab. So all the explosions is done miniature. This big, big battery is just exploding for... And again, that's... Do that for real instead of doing the CG. And it works much better because you see them falling down, you see the real fire. It's just getting more authentic and more organic and dramatic. So it's much better for the movie, I think.
Yeah. It might seem like a stupid question, this, but I'll go with it. How are you lighting those miniatures? So, like, for example, I mean, like, the tower itself.
Oh, it's a big tower. The tower is 15 meters high. 10, 12 meters high. It's a huge tower.
Blimey.
Everything is like... And the miniature is like, I think it was 5 by 5 meters, that room. It's a huge room. Biggest problem there is because you have to shoot high speed. You have to shoot around 96 frames and you have to shoot around 11 on the T-stop, you know, so you need a lot of lights. And that's a little bit tricky when you need so much light to keep the same atmosphere as you have on the big set, because most people cannot see the difference between the big set in Toronto and the small sets in UK. And of course, when you cannot see the difference, that's because it works pretty well. So that was a tricky part. It was like having the same look, but with much, much, much more light on, because you have to have so much more depth of field.
Yeah. Oh, it's fascinating, honestly.
We spent some time to do that, and it works really well.
Yeah. And when you're shooting, one of the questions I really wanted to ask was about the shot in the Arctic, where you've got him in the center of the shot when he's hunting him, and you've got the creature right there. How is that? Is that entirely golden hour lit? What are you blasting there? Because it's just this white landscape with this beautiful sort of banding on the horizon. Yeah, hit me with it.
It's a split between location and him on blue screen. You know, the close-up of him is shot against the blue where we have the light, his key light, but the rest is shot in the Arctic, not in the Arctic, but, you know, in north part of Canada, on an ice lake up there. And that's the same, some of the, for example, the tent sequence where the soldiers are coming to the tent. That's shot, some of that is shot on the ice lake in North Canada somewhere, and some of that is shot on the back lot in Toronto. So, you know, we're blending stuff together, and it works pretty well.
No, it really does. Yeah. It definitely, but I mean,
the torches is helping me a lot there, because the torches is still the key light, and it's organic, and that's the only light we have. We have some blue backlight, but the key light is the torches, nothing else, and it works extremely well, I think.
That's absolutely fascinating. I mean, like I love hearing these stories about what you've done. One of the questions I was going to ask that's got nothing to do with Frankenstein, but it's to do with John Wick 4. One of my favorite shots of all time is the moment where you're shooting, it's the shootout scene in John Wick 4, and the camera goes above, top down on the scene. Like I'm not going to be stupid enough to think that that is entirely done, you know, like reality with all the different things and stuff. But how much of that is practical? How much of it has been VFX?
Everything is practical there, except the bullets. You know, Chad has this idea about he wants to shoot a top shot of this fight, of the shootouts. So we built a pretty big set in Germany, and we shot that with a wire cam. So everything, that's a big, big set. So everything is practical, except of course, the bullet hits. And a little bit, I think the visual effects put a little bit fire in, but some of the fire was for real as well. But that set is done 100% for real. That's a big set we shot with a wire cam. So we planned that for a couple of weeks, you know, together with special effects and stunt people, how the stunt should be moving around. And then we laid it for a couple of weekends, and then we rehearsed it again, and we shot it 3 or 4 times, and that was that.
So you literally... Sorry, go ahead.
No, that was 100% chance of the I want to do this top shot, and everybody was saying, let's do it on blue, let's do the blah, blah. And he said, I want to build it for real. And so we did that, and we shot it for real, shooting straight down. And then... we shot everything, and I think the whole scene was shot like from above. And then he cut down a little bit, and we cut back up again. But everything is shot, built in the studio.
That's amazing. Well, because he's a stunt guy, isn't he? Chad, is it Stahelski?
Stahelski.
He's a stunt guy, so obviously all stuntmen have all choreographed. But it's like 90-second one-er. It's entirely shot top.
His background is a stuntman, but now he's a director, of course. But his background is stunt. And he's a master there. He knows exactly how to do that. And that's a good example about how to block a scene and how to shoot it. Because I was a little bit, that sounds interesting, but how are we going to do that? And we sit down and talk about how to put it off. And it's pretty cool. It was a very cool scene. And we shot it very late in the movie, because nobody wants to pay for it in the beginning.
So you had to convince them to fund it.
The studio have to be convinced to do that. And they did that in vain. That was fantastic.
It sounds like, from talking to you, it sounds like that you get excited by coming up with these new, or certainly finding ways to sort of shoot things as practically as possible. You know what I mean? Using all these, would that be a fair statement?
I'm a big fan of shooting as much as we can practical because I think you can see that. But a lot of course you cannot, you have to go into the CT world. And it seems like all big movies is coming into the CT world more and more. But it's just the way it is. But we really try to do as much as we can, try to do as much as we can for real. And to like the actors so they look so beautiful and strong as possible. And I think that's the beauty of movie making, you know, if you work together with the right directors, I really love to go the same way. It's just fantastic. And I've been working with Chad and Guillermo for some years now. And it's the two movie makers, I really want to do it 100% the right way.
Yeah. It certainly pays off. I think that when you're watching this film, it definitely feels more real than other films that are out there that are a lot more kind of artificial looking. You know what I mean? And there's a lot of people, I think there's a lot of videos out there online that are talking about why movies don't look like movies anymore. That's literally the title of one of these video explainers that's on YouTube, you know, and this actually feels like a movie that you're watching, you know, a proper movie when you go and see it. Does it therefore affect you when you say, oh, it's going direct to Netflix in certain respects? I know that we've had it, like, it's going to be in cinemas, or it has been in cinemas for maybe 2, maybe 3 weeks. But I kind of wish that it was in cinemas for longer. Like, I went and saw this screening and I told my wife about it, but she couldn't actually get to a movie theater to see it. So she's had to watch it on the normal screen at home, which isn't the best. You know, like, as a person writing in Hollywood, it's a, like a 38-incher or something like that. It's not a super, it's not like something that a large format Alexa 65 would kind of warrant, really. Do you understand?
Yeah, I understand 100%. But again, I think it's important to make movies people watch. It's better to make a movie where some people watch on Netflix or whatever they're watching it on, comparing to they're not watching it at all. And of course, I think movies should be seen together with a lot of other people in the cinema, but it's just the way it is right now. The world have changed. And of course, I love to go to the cinemas, but that's the same when we talked about going from film to digital. I think it's just the world have changed. And again, for me, it's the most important people watch what we are doing, you know. And I think the movies we're doing right now is really, really beautiful. And I think Frankenstein is a fantastic movie because it's a lot about love and forgiveness. And I think it's important to tell that to people when they're watching it. And I think, of course, it's better to people watch the movie than not watching it at all. It's a little bit, you know, I cannot say you should only make movies for cinema because that's not the world anymore. The world is people watching movies on all kind of formats. And as a filmmaker, is like making it as powerful as possible for the story. And I think that's what you're trying to do. And I think you can see that even when you're watching when you're watching back home, you can see the difference between a movie that's shot with love and character compared to a movie that's just shot. I hope that is the end of our storytelling. Because I think light and costumes and sets and camera movements is a very important part of storytelling. And it doesn't matter what you're watching it.
Yeah. I think one of the things that Frankenstein encapsulates really well is the human, you know, that we're all human, even the creature, I suppose, was very human. And I think that's something that it's the message that goes on throughout the film, you know, this idea of, yes, there will be people who make mistakes, things like that, but there's a very human nature to it. And even behind the camera and even behind the making of the film, there was the very human nature of it. And it seemed to breathe that.
That is what Guillermo was saying, you know, the movie's made of human beings for human beings. And I think that's the whole idea about some people are getting very concerned about AI and what is the future going to give us. But again, if you're telling the right story the right way, I think the movie is going to stay forever.
Yeah. Are you somebody who, so I had Steve Yedlin who did, he's done all Rian Johnson's films and he did the Wake Up Dead Man recently. And he was talking about digital versus film. There was a conversation we had about that. Are you somebody who falls into an argument on either side, or are you somebody who would like to make film on film as well as make film on digital? And it's, you know, it doesn't matter what format, you're just happy to make, to be involved in the medium.
Yes, you know, I've shot 40 features on film, I think, at least. So, you know, for me, it's most important is what kind of story do we want to tell with the director. For me, it's like that discussion. It's not super important for me to shoot it on film or shoot it on digital. You know, I just want to tell the story together with the director the way he or she thinks it should be told. And I'm not like, oh, I can only shoot on film. Because, again, the world is changing. And I think there's some beauty of movie making shot on film, and there's some beautiful things about shot on digital. And when you can shoot a movie like Frankenstein or John Wick 4 on digital, it looks pretty okay in my eyes. And of course, again, I don't miss all the mistakes the lab did all the time in the old days. And I was always blaming the cinematographer. You don't know how to expose, you don't know, blah, blah, blah. And I don't miss that discussion. And I think, you know, the beauty of the way we are doing the game on the chat, for example, it looks fantastic. And I'm very, very pleased to support those guys to make the movies they like to do. And if they come to me and said, let's shoot one on film, I would say, fantastic. Let's shoot on VistaVision or let's shoot on IMAX. It would be cool. Yeah. So I'm not falling in love with one of digital or film. I just want to do what is right for the movie.
That makes total sense. What would you say now, talking about Frankenstein? When I watched it, I thought to myself that this is kind of a marriage of, I look back at all of your films that you've done with Guillermo, and, you know, I'm a bit of a fanboy in this, but I look at Crimson Peak and the Gothic Fantasy and that, how it's got a strong color palette to it. I look at Nightmare Alley and how that uses shadows and high contrast and all those kind of things to reflect psychological states, I suppose you'd say. And then you've got Shape of Water, which has got all this fluid camera movement. And I suppose if we went to Mimic, we could talk about practical effects being used in that and miniatures and things like that. Would you say that Frankenstein is sort of a marriage of everything you've done prior to this with Guillermo, and this is like a kind of marriage of all those different things?
I think we are getting better and better to make this kind of movie. But again, Shape of Water was an amazing movie. I loved it. I still love the story. It's amazing. It was a fantastic. It was a small movie. We didn't have any money. And I was like, I think the way we did that movie with a very low budget was, this is very nice. And I love the story. I love the story between those. But Frankenstein is something bigger and nicer. Maybe not nicer, but it's another story. And I think the way we made that together, I just love it. And I'm a very big fan of Guillermo. I think the way he's making movies is, for me, perfect. And it's not like, it's just the way he makes it. You know, there's all kind of, people can make movies in all kind of ways. It's just, when we're doing this together, the storytelling and the light and the camera movement and the costumes and the setup, everything is blending so well together, and he's so well prepared, and he knows where he wants to go with the movie. And it's a pleasure for me to be a cinematographer for that. And I think everybody have the same, you know, when they're working with it, for example, Frankenstein, we are carrying that movie together, everybody. We're working for the movie and for Guillermo, and it's fantastic.
Yeah. He did, I mean, going back to Shape of Water, he talked about, I think I went to another one of his screenings, I can't remember, it might have been Nightmare Alley, but he talked about Shape of Water, the idea of shooting the same, the way he managed to manage the budget was to shoot the same set in multiple different guises throughout the film, you know?
For sure. I mean, he was just taking one, Paul Esterberg, those production designer, he was just changing one set into another set. And you know, I think we shot it in 10-12 weeks. It was very clever way. It was very clever done, because that set was going to be rebuilt to another set, and we were shooting on a television set for something else. You know, we rebuilt everything because we didn't have too many money. And for Guillermo, of course, you know, the way we shot that movie chronological. That means we shot you, me. We turned around all the time. You know, normal movies, you're shooting all the shots on you, and then we're going around to shoot my side. And then, but we didn't do that. We shot you, me, we turned around all the time. And of course, it works so well in the editing room. You can see how every camera move is blending together with the next one. That was because we shot scene number one, take 1, 2, 3, 4 together, but we turned the light around all the time, and it was so complicated. It was like, oh my God. But it works extremely well. We're changing light all the time.
Was that not tiring? Yeah, exactly. Changing lights all the time. Was that not tiring for you guys and all your gaffers and your gaffer and your grips and everything like that, constantly having to flip the world? Or was that just like part of it?
It was your part of it, and you keep you on your toes. And because it works so well. You know, the dance with the camera, the only way you can do that is because Guillermo knew exactly what the next shot was going to be or where he was coming from. And, you know, it was just a dream. Of course, it was not, you know, when you're shooting some movies, you're just shooting everything one way and then you're turning around. It's getting a little bit mechanic. But when working with the actors, you know, the actors is the most important, then the movie's coming more alive, I think. And we tried to do that as much as we could at Frankenstein as well.
Really?
Yeah, you know, we did a lot of like big wide shots and came in, but we shot it very, very chronological. And I think you can see that as well. It's good for the actors. It's good for everybody.
I think it does. I think that for a crew as well, I imagine it take you feel like you've been on the journey for the whole, you know, you've experienced the creature grow up is the best way I can describe it, really, in an age. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and again, my journey with Guillermo have been amazing because we have been together for like close to 30 years on and off. But it's just... It's funny because we still are moving forward. We're not going, oh, let's do the same as we did before. But we still love the same kind of movie making, like, again, single source lighting, you know, very specific colors, and the camera moving is very specific. And I just think you can feel that on the movie.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. When he talked about it, I've heard him talk a few times now, and it's like going to some, you know, like a pastor, you know, who's passionate about their what they're talking about. It really is. It's inspiring to hear him talk. But one of the things I questioned at the end of it was, I thought, this is the thing he's been wanting to make since he was a boy. He talked about going to mass and then watching monsters, you know, like after it, I think it was his phrase. And I thought, if this is the movie he's always wanted to make, where does he go from here? What's his next thing? You know what I mean? And I hope that it's something completely different now, you know?
I have no idea what he's going to do next time, but I hope it's going to be fantastic.
And I bet you hope you're on it.
I hope so too. But it's just the way he's always pushing everything. That is amazing, you know. And I think that's fantastic with a lot of directors that really try to push themselves and push the stories to something new they have not done before. And of course, Guillermo loves the creatures and he loves his story, but the way he's telling the stories is changing a lot. And I think that's beauty, you know. Frankenstein is shot in a very specific way. Of course, the camera's moving, but comparing to Shape of Water, it's like totally different. And it's, Shape of Water is a much more fantasy movie, but this is still a fantasy movie. You don't have any doubts about the creature is real. And that's the same with Shape of Water. You know, everybody, I was 100% sure the fishman was a fishman. And of course it's not, but it's just the character is getting so strong. So you feel you're actually working with a character. And that was the same with Frankenstein. Of course, the creature was a creature, but it was so much real. And it was a beautiful, beautiful person.
Yeah. I think that the message that comes through as well, I mean, like there's the message that comes through throughout it, that this creature can feel and feels isolated at the beginning and wants acceptance, is desperate for acceptance as well. And like hearing Guillermo talk about, I don't know, I think he was talking about his relationship with his dad and this father-son sort of interplay as well, was just very, very, yeah, just, again, human I think is the best way to describe it. You know what I mean? It was beautiful. And he talked about the son and the importance of the son. I'm glad that you highlighted on that in this interview, because he talked about how he couldn't look at the son when his father got kidnapped, which I thought was such a poignant thing. And then he said eventually he learned to embrace the sun again. And obviously that's the final shot that we have of Frankenstein, of him literally looking out into the sun and allowing it to touch his face, which is stunning. Like one of the most beautiful shots.
And we talked a lot about that. You know, the son is very, very important character for the Frankenstein, because, you know, he was in the beginning of his life, he was growing up very shortly with the son, and then he came into the holding cell where everything was gray, and he was like living in fear. And then the movie where he's actually forgiving his daddy, he's going into the son again. And I think it's a circle of son. And, you know, I think that's the whole symbolic with a lot of round windows in the ship and in the lab. You know, it's just these things about things going around in the circle.
What are the things that this is what the point in the interview now where I ask you, are there any, you know, I love my IMDb trivia page that has sort of things in that you should look for, anything like that. Is there anything that you can give me that's sort of like something that people might not have noticed, or something that you included deliberately in shots that was an element of trivia that people could look for when they're watching Frankenstein?
No, I just think, you know, again, the single source lighting, the light through the windows, you know, this like, don't be afraid of the darkness. Have the light have to be a character in the storytelling. I think that's the beauty of movie making, because lights and life is very, very strong things. That's what I'm thinking about all the time. Of course, light and shadows is a very, very strong part of storytelling in the movie making, and even in life, light and darkness. And I like it. It's for me, it's a really strong thing.
I'd agree. Gordon Willis is one of my favorite cinematographers of all time, and I loved how he had the darkness in. I don't know. Let me go through it. Godfather we'll use as the example, but yeah, I mean, I just love Gordon Willis for his use of shadow. I thought it was, I think they called him the Prince of Darkness as well.
Yeah, no, you know, a lot of cinematographers, you know, have done this, and Gordon Willis was, of course, fantastic. But you know, play with the lights, tell the story with the light. I think that is so strong. We have that. We have people in the cinemas, you know, we can tell a very strong story about the character with light. And I think that's the beauty of that. If you dare to do that and you have the supporting from the director.
My last question to you, Dan, and we're a film school, obviously a Filmmakers Academy is a fantastic film school that helps to teach people cinematography and different things like that. And I wonder what your message would be to young cinematographers who are coming through right now. They're obviously being faced by an awful lot of crazy new tech and AI even and things like that. What would your message be to them? Because they're obviously going to watch Frankenstein. They're going to see your body of work and be amazed like I was and inspired. What would your message be to these young cinematographers coming through now?
My message is to young, or not to young, but to every people, but especially, of course, the young filmmakers, is like, you have to follow your heart. You really have to figure out, what do you want to do? You have to find your own, follow your heart. I think that's the most important, because there's so many things, and you don't be afraid of your mistakes. As I said in the beginning, I've made so many mistakes, so you don't have any ideas about it. And I'm doing them every day, but some of them is going to be more difficult to see, but don't be afraid of pushing your into something you don't know what is. Don't go on the thick ice, go into the thin ice, because that's what you're learning. You're learning of your mistakes and follow your heart. And I think that's so important. Look and try. And, you know, I think as you more you do it, the better you get it. Just try it every day if you can. And it's happening every day. You know, how is when you're sitting in the cafe and have coffee, just see how the light is coming through the windows, the reflection is working around, you know, a person taking a cup of coffee and you see the reflections for the table is changing. It's just feel the life coming into your world and don't be afraid of mistakes. That is my advice.
Dan, it's been such a pleasure and an honor for me to interview you and to talk to you about your film and your films that you have done. And thank you so much for talking to me today. I'm honored to talk to you. Thank you so much.
You're the same. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be here.
You know, I've been on enough sets to know that the best learning happens in the moment. When you start to see the blocking happen and you start to visualize the light, That's why the Filmmakers Academy app is a total game changer. Need to brush up on your camera settings, maybe some lighting setups, or some team dynamics to build and inspire? Pull out your mobile device, open the app, and boom, pro-level guidance at your fingertips. Download the Filmmakers Academy app and bring the knowledge with you to every set, every shoot, every time.